Hello, I'm Dr. Jean Kornstrom, and I coordinate the program Connecting with Students for Success for Retention. And today we're going to be talking with several faculty who are members of this program. The program seeks to impact every single student on campus, whether they are in undergraduate classes or graduate, whether they're online or in person, and whatever subjects they're in. And the program focuses on four different practices. One is to get to know the students' names very early in the semester. Two is to provide early feedback that's actionable for the students. The third is to hold high standards while maintaining support for the students. And the fourth is to hold individual meetings with students, again, to get to know them and support them in their programs. So today we're going to start by asking each of you to talk about how you implement the four practices in your selected course. And will you also first introduce yourself and tell what subject? And Joanna, do you want to start?
Sure. My name is Joanna Sanderson. I'm a professor of accounting in the Rio Grande College of Business, and I've been working at Sol Ross for almost 3 years now. So I actually started with the Connecting with Students for Success program in its pilot season in the fall of 2022. And one of the main things that I try to do is to start learning the students' names early. So I start on day one by just actually calling attendance and calling roll, which I know some professors don't really require attendance, but I do have an attendance requirement. And so it helps for me to just kind of go through that roll, associate where they're sitting. I find that the students are kind of creatures of habit, so they tend to stick to where they sit on the first day. So that helps me as well. And in conjunction with that, to really kind of bolster the connection and try to associate something with their name other than where they're sitting, I do a 1 week, first week kind of welcome discussion. And we do that through our learning management system. But I go through and I read all of those and I do respond to all of them. And then I try to associate something, a fact about that student that they shared with them when I learn their name. So say if somebody tells me where they're from, then once I've realized their name and can connect that with them, then I will say, oh yes, you know, you're from this place. And I try to have that connection with them in my face-to-face course so that they realize that I am taking initiative and reading those discussions, that it is important to me on that level, but it also just really helps to associate them with me as well for my purposes of remembering their name. And then in regards to the one-on-one meeting, which I think is probably the hardest of the four pillars there, I learned after probably the first semester that I really needed to tie that with something. Otherwise, I wasn't going to receive a lot of meetings, feedback from the students as far as actually scheduling those. So I tied that with our major project, which is due about halfway through the semester. And so that way I'm meeting with them early on and getting to know something about them. And it also puts a basic subject for us to start our meeting off with. For some of the shy students or students who really don't want to come to the meeting, they have a understanding of what we're going to be talking about to begin with. And I do find that most students will then branch off and start to talk about different things. So it's really helpful though to get some of the students that are a little bit more reserved into your office hours and to speak with you if you have a reason for them to meet with you.
Okay, thank you. And would you like to share how you address those principles?
Sure. I'm Dr. Thornton Larson and I'm in biology. So I have a couple different class sizes that I deal with. So anywhere from, you know, just below 10 to my introductory level courses, which get classrooms full of 40 students. So in the smaller classes, learning names is very much a breeze almost. It's very simple. The 40 seaters, I try really, really hard. And it is very challenging. And I end up probably knowing by the end of the semester almost everybody, with a couple exceptions. Now, as far as feedback goes, I've always tried to be quick on feedback because I remember the days when I was going through it, and there was always that one you'd get where they wouldn't give you anything back in time, and so you're like, well, hopefully I pass by the end of the term. Hopefully this time, you know. Hopefully they're all smiling down on me and saying he deserves to pass. And I hated that. So I've always been good about getting feedback back to the students. But I, before joining the program, I don't think I was as actionable about it and making sure I was providing kind of a quality to that feedback in a way. I don't think I thought about it as thoroughly as I do now. And that's been very helpful, especially because I do kind of try and keep pretty good standards on the students and try to get them to come up to the level I expect them to. Now, individual meetings have been, are feel like they're pulling teeth to me. It's a struggle. I mean, I tell students, you know, my door is, my office is an open door policy, door open policy. you know, if the door's open, I'm here. Please bother me. I'm probably making a PowerPoint and I want to be distracted. Please save me, anything. And students do eventually take me up on it, but I've also had to, you know, entice students a little bit with visit me three times throughout the semester, and I'll give you 10 points extra credit on something.
I like that.
And even that, I get less than a third of students coming in for my one-on-one meetings. I practically am begging them sometimes.
Yeah. Even with tying it to the project, it's on the grading rubric that it's 10 out of 100 points, so basically 10%. And I still inevitably have several that won't come. And it's like, this is the easiest 10 points of the project. Just come talk to me. I'm not that scary. But this semester I had 77%. So that I think that was the highest. 20 out of 26 students. I think that was the highest.
Yeah.
I don't know what the difference was, but yeah. you just have to keep trying.
I think it's almost a bigger struggle in the smaller classes to get them to come to office hours because you already have a rapport where they feel pretty comfortable mm-hmm. with you in the classroom. So they feel they've gotten what they want to get out already in the classroom. Because it's a comfortable space. As our programs go, the classes get a little smaller compared to our introductory classes. So they don't see the need as heavily as maybe the introductory courses might. But again, I added that whole policy after starting the program to all my classes, even though you know, we usually only focus on one for the purposes of the program in a given semester.
Okay, well, thank you. We do have to be creative in enticing students to these meetings because we have found that the meetings, once the students are there, are very valuable. One of the faculty, and you can guess which one it is, we have 40 in the program. One of the faculty entices students by meeting at the Dairy Queen. And over Blizzard, he finds that they are more willing to talk and sweeten up. but certainly we have to be resourceful in where we do have the meetings, but it can't, once I drove down to Del Rio to meet with a student, so it can be challenging.
Well, and you're hitting on something that I think is really important, that idea of, you know, is an office space even an appropriate meeting space if you want the students to open up, which in itself is another challenge.
Yeah. I actually have a weird shaped office. I love it because it's got a great view. But I have found that I have started using the classroom that I meet mm-hmm. them in because it is right next to my office. And so they'll come to the office and then we'll just walk right over there since it's next door. And I find that they're more comfortable there as well because they're already used to being in that setting 2-3 days a week. So I have found that that works better as well than asking them to come into my office. It seems so scary to them apparently.
Well, I've considered that too.
Well, we do get creative in the meeting location, and that is really important. Part of the program also is building relationships among the faculty and developing our expertise. So for this program, every semester we select different books. This is one, Connections Are Everything. Another one, Relationship Rich Education. And we study these and talk about them as faculty members in our groups, and then we try to implement some of the practices. What have you gained from reading these and discussing them in the group meetings?
Well, for me personally, before teaching at Sol Ross and starting in fall of 2022, I did not have an education background or an academia background. I was in the private sector, so to speak, for accounting. So really, pedagogy wasn't something that I had a strong background in. So I think this program has really helped reinforce just feedback in general. I know Thor mentioned that feedback is very important and that he's become more actionable in his feedback. I knew that I wanted to give timely feedback as well, because I also remember having those classes where you didn't get feedback. And there's something we always say in accounting where information has to be timely and relevant. And I really feel that same way about feedback. Like, it needs to be timely and relevant for it to be beneficial to the student or to whoever you're giving feedback to. So really, I brought along two books. So I brought along The Feedback Fundamentals and Evidence-Based Practices, as well as The Impact of Feedback in Higher Education, which we have also read in the program. So the longer you've been in the program, the more books you get to read. And both of these really, obviously, you know, they have feedback in the names. So they discuss feedback a lot, but, and some of them are basic things that we don't think about when providing feedback, such as building a positive rapport with somebody. So we are more likely to accept feedback or what we might feel is criticism or positive, either way it goes, from somebody that we respect and have a positive rapport with. And that seems very common sense, but sometimes if you are, you know, if you're grading 25 papers or 40 papers, you kind of forget that. And so it's important to start establishing that connection early on in the semester, so that by the time you are giving feedback to the students, they feel like they can trust you, they feel like they can respect you, hopefully, and that there is a positive rapport built up. So that kind of goes back to our pillars of learning those students' names as soon as possible, and then giving them that early feedback. And so that seems basic, but it's something that has really shifted my perspective, I guess, in wanting to build those relationships, and also noticing how certain students do receive the feedback as in correlation to how I feel our relationship is at that point. And then this book also, the fundamental feedback fundamentals and evidence-based best practices, also just discusses some really basic things like the environment in which you provide the feedback, who, what, when, where, and how, and just ensuring that you're not maybe rambling when giving feedback or trying to fill things in, especially if it's a tough situation or tough feedback that you're trying to provide. Thinking about the modality that you're giving the feedback in, and even face-to-face feedback. So if we're in the classroom and we ask a question, if we're face-to-face and the student maybe answers, but it's maybe not the right answer, making sure that our facial cues are not showing anything negative by that, things like that that you might not think about, but that do have an impact on the student and how you are giving them that immediate feedback, even in the classroom. So I think overall, the books have obviously taught me a lot about kind of the feedback process and thinking about that. Both of these books touch on either feed forward or forward thinking feedback. And that's basically just thinking about the fact that when we provide feedback, we're basing it off of something that we've already seen or that has already happened. But we want that feedback to help enhance the growth in our students or whoever we're giving that feedback to. So trying to align feedback more to forward thinking and aligning it to a goal in the future is very important as well. And I had never considered that. So I think those are probably the major things that I've learned from the books. And then the meetings are always great, because somebody always has really good ideas, and we are across different disciplines. So it seems that we also have different general personalities amongst our students. So some professors are in disciplines where students seem to be more extroverts. And so they'll have a way of, you know, doing something that I think would never work for my students, who tend to be a little bit more introverted. But it's a good practice to think, to hear what they have to say and then try it. So there's just a lot of different perspectives and disciplines that are in the meetings. And so it really helps to give ideas of different things to try.
Thank you.
I pretty much echo almost everything Joanna says. I love the term she used too, of tough feedback situations, mm-hmm. because I think that's a key component that I was uncovering when I was going through some of the texts, is them outlining the definitions in a clear, notable fashion that I usually relate to students when I'm having talks with them about the purpose of the feedback. Because I'm not remembering which book it was, but we look at the definition of positive feedback versus negative mm-hmm. feedback, right? Positive feedback, you're essentially patting them on the back for being successful. You want to have them continue going down that path. So they've already kind of met your goal and you want to see them keep going for going at that goal again and again. Whereas negative feedback suggests, right, there's a gap between the expectation and where they performed, and we want them to build toward that. And sometimes that gap, as you're trying to express where you want them to go with that, that accomplishing and filling that gap, can seem like a personal attack to someone, depending on phraseology or something like that. So just purely understanding from a standpoint of the definitions of negative feedback and positive feedback, and you saying tough feedback really, really hit that really well, I think, as opposed to what we'd automatically do in a normal conversation, right? I talk about that all the time with the term in biology, adaptation. Because adaptation in our normal vernacular, we're like, yeah, we're adapting to where we live. No, no, we're acclimating to where we live. Adaptation takes, you know, multiple generations. But similarly, we view negative feedback as an attack where it's meant to still show growth or build toward growth. And again, that forward thinking phraseology, I think, is very important. Using terminology like, what I'd like to see next time, what I'd like to see go for next time, or in the future, try this, you know, because you don't want to attack what they've already been done. You want to praise that they've given you something. It's fantastic. It's wonderful that they made a good, you know, the old college try, right? To do something like that. And I think that's been fantastic. And with the meetings, yeah, I agree 100% with Joanna. Half of it is seeing all these people, yeah, different disciplines, sometimes very similar disciplines, and different people have different strategies for how they're trying to receive feedback from students as they're going forward or give that feedback to the students. And I've found that to be extremely useful in how I approach those situations.
Thank you. You both have really addressed our next question, but you may want something to add on it. Have you changed your teaching in any way? What would be a significant way you think you've changed your teaching since joining Connecting with Students for Success?
So as I mentioned, I started Connecting with Students for Success the first semester that I taught. So I had the intentions of doing most of these four things already in my class. I wanted to know my students' names. I thought we're going to be, I'm working at Sol Ross. We have, it's in my program, smaller classes. I think my largest has been around 30, so I don't quite get to the level in some of the core classes like biology and math, and those core classes that in history that tend to get really large. So I thought, well, I'm going to have small classes. I should be able to learn their names. I'm going to hold them to high expectations because in the business world, or especially if they're leaning towards accounting, they're going to have some high standards to meet. So high expectations are important. And I wanted timely and relevant feedback because I liked that as a student myself, but I didn't know how to provide that feedback as well as I do now. So that's a major thing. And the one-on-one meeting, I think, really bolsters the connection more. So I like that. But that was the only thing that I wasn't planning on doing. So I'm not sure if it's changed my teaching because I don't have anything really to compare it to, but over time it definitely has. Over every semester we are reading additional books, we are looking at different things. I've also completed the Quality Matters rubric training, and they talk a lot about feedback in that. And also that alludes back to the phraseology you were speaking of, kind of,
right,
you know, this is what you did well, this is what we might want to look at in the future, and kind of how you put that into written feedback is heavy in that rubric training.
I completely forgot about that. Yeah. That's absolutely
the
right
way that you like said it made me immediately think about that. And that's what I recall. So, I mean, I've really tried to focus a lot on building feedback over the past six semesters. And that's probably in like 100% in part to this program. I'm not sure that I would have delved into it or tried to have personal growth from my standpoint as much, if I wasn't involved in this program. And I also think that it has allowed me to really see the connections and how beneficial they are with the students. And I know we're going to talk about that a little bit more in the future in the minute, so I won't go too much into that. But I definitely think that it's had a huge impact, and I constantly strive to change what I'm doing if I see that it's not working. So sometimes having the meetings and hearing perspectives from other professors is really something that helps me with that. It's like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to try that, and then I try to implement it as well.
So my experience prior to coming here was mainly doing some community college teaching prior to finishing my PhD, and then I came here. So I had a little bit of experience, but what I learned throughout my process going through graduate school before coming into the role of a professor, instructor, what have you, is there is virtually no emphasis on teaching or the learning aspect while you're going through these programs. They're so focused on the research. When I was doing my undergrad, I went to a small school, so there was a lot more emphasis on the teaching and the relationships. But it had been so long since I had visited that, I had to kind of relearn that a little bit and think about my journey. And even through my graduate journey, I was involved in programs that were all about research-based education. So trying to teach using programs or labs or lectures that have shown to have an impact on students through the research and education process. But the amount of activity that program got at that particular university was very, very minimal, only by a few grad students mainly, not even so many faculty. So that trying to be a good instructor, I think, is and provide and build your feedback is very rare in general. And institutions like this one, Sol Ross, I think, gives that opportunity to connect with students in a better way and connect with faculty, right? These bigger institutions, you don't even know your dean. And if you do know your dean, it's usually not in a good way. But here, you know, your dean knows you even beyond a black and white number. You're very much a person. And the same can be said in my experience here. I've had some mentorship that I really appreciate and leadership at both the program and department level that's been really, really helpful. And this program is kind of a very good example of that too, of that situation where everybody really wants to make a difference across different program areas. And I think that's been incredibly useful. But yeah, I mean, I don't know too many people here who aren't amenable to growth. And I think this program, I mean, what, we have 40 faculty in it, you said?
Yes, we do.
That's incredible. 40 faculty, which is a significant portion of faculty at this particular institution, is incredible. And that just shows the dedication that this faculty has to the education process of the students going through the program.
I'd like to focus now on the real purpose of this program, and that is the students. And as you've been implementing the program, what do you think the impact has been on your students?
By the time that I get my students, they are at the sophomore level and they're entering into their kind of basic business courses, or they are maybe doing a business minor or just need one business course. And some of the other degree plans and program plans do have them where they have to just take the first accounting class. So I tend to have more students in that class from other parts of the campus, which is really nice as well. So I typically have them from sophomore through senior year. If they are within the business program or a business minor, I have to have them repetitively. So I find that it's really nice to do it with that introductory class, and then I can continue to build the connection with them. And it does help me to remember them next semester if I remember a little tidbit about them from those discussions as well, and that helps me associate with that name. So I try to build upon that. But I think that there is a definite positive impact specifically in relation to knowing the students' names and then the feedback that is provided. Students for the most part, want to know that they are a person, just like Thor was talking about with the faculty. You know, they want to know that their professor does know who they are and is interested in their complete and total education. And so I do my best to let my students know that by knowing their name, by knowing things about them, asking them how different student activities are going that I know they're in, any way that I can to kind of create more of that positive rapport that's going to have them, you know, accepting the feedback better and things like that as well. But I do see a big difference from the first time I have that student till their senior year, and or at this point I have had some students every semester from undergrad to sophomore year, and now they're finishing their graduate degrees. And so I've had them at all of these levels even in just 3 years, and I can see that it makes a difference, and they tell me that it makes a difference, which is really nice as well. I mean, I got an email from a student yesterday that was he's graduating with his MBA, and I've had him every semester, and you know, it's just a nice little thank you and being part of his education, his journey. And it's, you know, that's one of the reasons that I wanted to be in higher education. So it's really nice to see that. And I'm not sure that I would have that if I wasn't trying to build those connections. It also helps me to, with the feedback and the connection, I ask them for feedback as well in class and then at the end of every semester. You know, we do our course evaluation surveys, but I also give them a chance in a discussion to tell me things that they've learned, that they liked, that they didn't like. And I do ask them that throughout the semester if I can tell something isn't working when I'm trying to teach them a particular subject. And they're ever evolving. They're changing very quickly, the students and how they learn. So that has made me ever evolving as well. I'm trying to keep up and change my teaching practices to best fit them as well. There are some things that they always complain about that I'm not changing. You know, they don't like 10 p.m. assignments due for some reason, but I don't think they should be working on homework at midnight, personally. So I just won't budge on that one. But it's nice to get feedback back from them as well, and I do try to implement it. So I think that with that connection, they feel a little bit more open on being able to give me feedback through some other avenue other than the course evaluation survey that is anonymous. They feel a little bit more emboldened to be able to tell me how they feel. And I sometimes you have to have some thick skin, you know. You have to accept some negative feedback also, or some tough feedback. But it helps you think. So I think it's kind of beneficial in two ways. It really, those connections help them, and I think it does also increase their retention. I know we're still kind of early in our data mining in regards to how much it affects our retention, but with the positive feedback that I tend to get from my students as they go through the program and I have them multiple semesters, I really do think that they are benefiting from it. And then just to touch on one more thing, anything that I ever hear in passing or before classes or anything, if anything that I ever hear that they are frustrated with in my class or in others, is not having timely feedback. And so there are certain students, and I think in our last podcast, Sarah alluded to it as well, that they will avoid certain professors if they think that they're, if they've heard from other students that they're not going to get timely feedback and they're going to have to wait till mid-semester or the end of the semester to know. So I think both of those things are really encouraging for the students.
Right. It's an absolute challenge to keep up with the multitude of assignments between classes and then the tests pile up and,
yeah,
and sometimes just expressing to the students in your own way that you're beating your head over your back trying to keep up and you're behind, and that's not normal for you to be this behind. Even that acknowledgement that you are exasperated
and trying,
it goes a long way with students. Yeah, the trying
as well,
which is exactly what my little statement that I wrote kind of covers, is that feedback process, which I think is immensely important to students. They really goes both ways. And I think that's one of the more important parts, is the students not only get timely feedback from us, but we've opened it up, I think a lot of us anyway, to receive feedback from them. I do daily exit notes for my lectures. Usually it's just about the course in general. So they're giving me like something they didn't get from that day's course, something they completely got, something they were kind of, you know. And that usually allows me to, especially at the introductory classes, I take a little note card and put little check marks to see what I might need to cover for the first 5 minutes of the next class. just to kind of hit home some of the key points and revisit those. You know, we got a schedule to keep, so we can't always do that for every class, but for some of them, I try to see what they're feeling weak on so that I can plan my reviews accordingly, so I can do that accordingly. And that creates a little bit of buy-in for the students where they see us as their professors making active changes based on what they feel the course would relate, how the course would relate to them better. And I think that's been incredibly useful but for my relationship between the students and myself, is showing that kind of buy-in that I have in them, and then they give it back. You know, energy is infectious, right? You smile at someone, they can't help but smile back. You laugh, they laugh. You sneeze, they sneeze. You yawn, they yawn. You know, all that stuff. It's all infectious. And I think that kind of experience has been very important, and it creates better feedback takers and givers of the students too, which, you know, when I look at what I get from the feedback from those exit notes from my freshman level courses, and then look, you know, I was looking today at one of my courses and how pointed the areas they thought they were weak in was in my senior level class. They've figured it out. They realize that they need to be more specific. If they title the thing they didn't get from the class is the entire chapter, and they put, I didn't get, what would a chapter in freshman bio be? Macromolecules. I don't understand macromolecules. I can't go over all four macromolecules again in class. There's not time for that. Can you tell me you didn't understand bonds of all the macromolecules or something like that? Something more specific. And freshmen need to learn that, and they do as they go through. But by the time senior level comes around, they're very pointed in their feedback, which is incredibly helpful. They know how to communicate that feedback. So by having more people invested, we're going to have students who we can help with their growth even better as the program continues throughout their time here.
So how do you implement the exit notes? Do you give them pieces of paper as they come in about it?
Okay. No, at the end, because I found that, especially in my earlier level courses, when it's, again, more of a general requirement, some people like to blow it off or try to blow it off, and then they get mad at me for things. But I find if I hand out the exit notes at the beginning of class for something like that, what they will do is they'll fill it out at the beginning of class. Right. Whereas at least, you know, if I'm handing them out at the end of class, they're not able to fill that out without at least listening to me for a little bit.
I really like that idea.
Yeah. I've found it to be my most useful interaction with students.
Yeah. I try to take like a verbal interview, kind of, you know, how's it going? What do you think, you know, about this or that? If I think it's something that's particularly difficult, but they have different perspectives. And then sometimes they're just not as willing to say like out loud. Mm. I think they would be more apt to actually write it down.
Especially in my earlier level courses, I have a really hard time, or the more challenging subject classes, I have a harder time getting students to participate within the classroom bounds, even though we've all heard it our whole lives. I mean, we're all the same on that too, where, you know, more people than just us are going to have that question.
That's a question, yeah.
But we're too afraid to say it in a group setting for that one person to say, oh, they don't get that. How could they? What kind of silly person are they? You know, that's our worst nightmare experience. And the students, you know, they're going to feel that way about it for the most part. And the person who asks the most poignant question is always the person doing the best in class. So they phrase it in a way where sometimes the people listening are like, man, they asked a really good question. My question's just, can you go over this again really quick? Whereas they were asking about something that shows critical thinking, goes beyond it. So that student automatically thinks their question is not as good a question. And that's just not the case. But
you can say it as many times as you want, and they've heard it their whole lives.
Yeah, they've heard it their whole lives as well. And I haven't figured out how to crack that egg completely open yet. Occasionally, you know how each class you have has its own personality, right? Each class, like this semester, I've got my class that they're not going to really say anything. I've got the class where they're all talk to the point where half the class, I'm pretty sure I'm going on tangents and the class is having a blast with it. And then there's the in between. And that's just the personality of the class based on the student composition that makes it up and all that. But they still, with the exit notes, it's been really very positive. And the students who are a little quieter during those more boisterous classes still get their point across to me so I can talk about it later. Now, the one of the challenges I have at the moment is I do kind of half take attendance with the exit notes, which does take away the anonymity, though when I'm doing my note card check marks, I'm not looking at the names on it. I'm not concerned with
that. Yeah, it's more of
that.
Just gathering what you need to reinforce in the next class.
But it takes away the student's feeling of anonymity, which might impact the information I get from those a little bit. So I'm constantly trying to think, should I go back to the anonymous version or should I not? And I haven't come to what I feel is the right way yet.
Well, our last question, right now we are recruiting for a fourth cohort. Since 2022, Joanna, when you first started, we have added three cohorts. And so with trying to reach out to faculty and talk about this program, my last question is, would you recommend this program to other faculty and why?
I would. And I mean, we have 40, which like Thor alluded to earlier, that is a pretty good percentage for our university. And that's great and fantastic. And thank you for continuing the program and continuing to grow it. But just having 40, I think reaching for a goal of 100% is really ideal. And the reason I think that is because I have seen the impact on students, but also the impact on faculty. We have been able to learn and grow from each other and also meet each other. In some cases, I would never know Dr. Igo, for instance. He's in another part of campus that is
isolated.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. So, but you know, he's got so many great ideas and he is such a valuable person to the cohort.
He really is a wealth of knowledge.
He really is. And so it's like I never would have met him. So that's a great part of this program as well. But also because I do feel like I know of some faculty members who maybe have been teaching for a very long time and they have a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge, but they maybe are not changing as much to keep up with the students or as open to receiving feedback from the students, which can sometimes cause the students to feel like there is a wall between them and that faculty member. And so I feel like this program is a way to continuously educate yourself in how to educate others. So, I mean, Thor alluded to that as well. He went through a PhD program and he focused a lot on research, but not necessarily on the education portion. And that's the same for me. I know you're in education, so it's not quite the same for you, but in my background, I don't have that either. So this program is really great for just opening up your eyes a little bit as far as what you are willing to change maybe about what you're doing and any ways that you can connect with those students and provide additional feedback and work towards, you know, ultimately retention for our university and a good education for our students.
Similarly, I think seeing more faculty involved would be great. As Joanna reiterated, Joanna, I'm sorry. How did I do that? I've known you a long time at this point. Oh my God.
I just answered to Joanna.
I'm so embarrassed. Oh, but as Joanna indicated, that idea of going through, programs yourself, there isn't as much highlighting of educating as you move on to whatever's after grad school. And this institution does tend to hire a lot of people who are very, very fresh in their careers oftentimes. So having any opportunity to get a little bit of growth and support other than, a very black and white written letter that's talking about how your teaching is, which is very useful for, you know, recommendations and things like that. But in terms of growth, it's not as easy to grow from those kinds of critiques we may get on a normal scale. So having an actual program that can instill some level of sort of pedagogy or steps in those directions. Because again, learning how to educate is a completely different skill set than what people have come into these roles for. I mean, we've come into these roles because we're supposed to be subject matter experts, and we do understand our subject matter very well. Now, how to express that to other people is not something we're necessarily trained in. We sometimes, you know, when we're out sitting with people and expressing something exciting about our research, that excitement's infectious and people all of a sudden want to know more about that. But expressing it in a way that's able to be picked up and learned as a more broad conceptual thing, most people are not trained in that. And so I think this provides a gateway to young faculty, and I hadn't even considered older faculty who, you know, haven't been able to, for one reason or another, see how they can change what they've been doing forever and how that could be easier than they're fearing it might be. Because, you know, changing up a course takes a lot of work. And changing up your approach takes even more work and personal reflection. And I'm sure I'm going to get to a point where I'm not going to want to do any of that.
Yeah, I think it does. I think that's why I notice it, is because I think that people get to a point where, you know, it is maybe a little bit of complacency, but also it's sometimes hard to take a moral inventory of yourself and have some self-reflection. And I think that gets harder just in general as we get older. And so I think the longer you've been doing something and the older you are, it's harder to think that maybe you need a change, but it's refreshing to change sometimes, even though it's a lot of work.
Though we've got plenty of examples of people who are exactly the opposite of what we're describing. No names being mentioned.
Well, we certainly will be welcoming all faculty who would be interested. And I want to thank both of you and say it's such an honor and privilege for me to work with you. Thank you very much.
And likewise, thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. All the way around, always.
Yes, yay for us.
Bully.